Welcome to this episode of Out of the Best Books, the podcast where we deep dive into classic literature and have conversations about what we've learned and discovered along the way. We love all things books and reading, and we want to share our love of the classics with you. We hope to inspire you to read along with us and join in the conversation. I'm Amity.
And I'm Laura. Let's get started.
So first, let's talk about how neither of us sound like ourselves.
All right. Our voices are pretty rough. Yeah. In fact, I coached a soccer game yesterday, and the entire time I'm like yelling and coaching from the sideline, and my voice is like cracking and squeaking the whole time. And I'm like, I'm just sick, guys. It's not.
This morning I was like, oh, I'm gonna sound awful. And I'm like, Amity might sound worse. So we both sound bad.
Both sound bad.
Apparently there's stuff going around in Oregon and Utah.
Oh, like crazy. Because I mentioned the strep throat, but there's also stomach bugs. And what else have I heard about? I mean, just like the common cold is rampant. And that's just what I have. But
we had a little powwow after our last episode that we recorded and how we just talk for too long.
We did, and how it's a little bit, it's not scattered, but it's like maybe a little bit choppy, just the way that we've done it before. And so we just talked about putting a little more time into our prep work. And so what we're going to do is we're each going to take a turn, and we're just going to do like pretty much a 5-minute recap of the chapter. And then we'll discuss the chapter as a whole and probably pull a few things and talk about it from there. But that way, we probably spend quite a bit less time. Our episodes will probably be quite a bit shorter overall. And you get the sort of the structure and the meat of the chapter up front instead of trying to go through and talk about it. And then we interject our thoughts and everything. But instead, we're going to give you like the breakdown of the chapter up front. And then we'll jump in with some of our takeaways.
We even thought maybe we should redo the first episode of The Great Gatsby, but that would be a lot of work. So we're just going to go from here. And hopefully
we'll just go from here.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes. So I'm up with chapter 4 of The Great Gatsby. This is the chapter where Nick and Gatsby go to the city for lunch. Gatsby on the way there is telling the story about himself. And Nick is like, this is totally unbelievable. I don't believe anything he's saying. And he kind of acts funny when he says things he's done. He kind of has this like manner where it's like, are you really telling the truth? Right. He says things quickly. He kind of stumbles over things. So yeah, Nick is like, I don't know if I believe anything you're saying. And one funny thing that happens on the way to this city is that he gets pulled over for speeding by the police. He pulls out a Christmas card and is like, here. And the policeman's like, oh, I'm sorry, go ahead and go. And so after he leaves, Nick is like, what was that? And he's like, well, I got a Christmas card from the commissioner. And so I just showed it to him and I get to go. Which is,
yeah, we're tight. So
yeah, it cracked me up. So they go to have lunch and they eat in this restaurant with a man named Meyer Wolfsheim. And Wolfsheim talks about how he thinks a lot of Gatsby. Wolfsheim actually mistakes Nick as a criminal. And so he says, like, are you, you know, here for some connections? And Gatsby's like, oh, no, not this guy. This isn't the guy we talked about earlier. So anyways, and then Nick finds out that Wolfsheim is a gambler. And that he actually fixed the 1919 World Series. And he kind of says, Nick kind of says, well, how did he do that? And they say, well, he saw an opportunity, so he just went for it. But not really forthcoming with how this happened, but he's definitely a gambler. He tells a story about a friend of his that walked out of a restaurant they were eating in and got shot. And so Nick is kind of wondering, is this guy part of organized crime? And then is Gatsby part of organized crime? Like, what? You know, this is all a mystery to him. He's trying to figure it out. As they're finishing up lunch and they're leaving, Tom Buchanan comes in and Nick introduces Tom and Gatsby to each other. And Gatsby acts very strange and he's like embarrassed. Nick can tell that he's embarrassed about something that he doesn't understand yet what the deal is between the two of them. After lunch, Nick meets Jordan Baker at the plaza for tea. And earlier on the car ride over, Gatsby had said, this really long, sad thing happened to me, and you'll find out about it later. Well, this is later, and this is where he's going to find out about it from Jordan. So Nick learns from Jordan that Gatsby and Daisy, she was before Daisy Fay, now she's Daisy Buchanan, had fallen in love when he was a soldier, and she was very young. And her family had disapproved, and they had stopped them from running off together and getting married. And so a year later, Tom comes in. He's extremely wealthy. He buys her like a $350,000 pearl necklace, and she's impressed. And she wanted to marry somebody with money. And so she ends up marrying Tom. I think it said like when she comes home from the honeymoon, she is smitten with Tom. Like she's like totally in love with him. And then I think through his actions and stuff, she kind of realizes who he actually is later. And it's kind of a sad situation, but
yeah, it's like, it's not that much later that he's like in a car wreck and they find a chambermaid at the hotel with him.
Yeah. So that probably is like at what point she starts to see who he actually is. And to think that that would happen like really soon after their marriage and honeymoon. Yeah. And they were gone for like 3 months on their honeymoon. Mm-hmm. I mean, this guy's got money. So Jordan says that Gatsby has never fallen out of love with Daisy and that he bought this mansion in West Egg so that he could be across the bay from her. And so if you remember in chapter one, when he's looking across the bay at the green light, that is the light at the end of Daisy's dock. And so he would like stand there at night and look at it and imagine her and what she was doing. And he wanted to be close to her. He has those parties on the weekend, these huge parties. And he was hoping that Daisy at one point would show up at one of his parties, but she hasn't yet. And so Jordan mentions to Nick that Gatsby wants him to invite Daisy and Gatsby over for tea and not tell Daisy that Gatsby's going to be there, but like to surprise her and get them together.
And that gave us the, what do I want to say, meat and potatoes. One thing that I wanted to bring out, this is a little bit random, but it's just sort of, you know, my historical weirdness that I wanted to bring out. So this, you were talking about how Gatsby, he's like telling his story to Nick and it's not like super believable. And it's really funny because there's this part that I was reading where he talks about being in the war. And he tells a story about how he's in the Argonne Forest. He took two machine gun detachments so far forward that there was a half mile gap on either side of us where the infantry couldn't advance. He talks about with just a few men, he takes down these three German divisions and he's decorated by everybody, even Montenegro. And I'm reading it and I'm like, this story is really familiar. I was like, it sounds like the true story of Sergeant York. And it totally is, because during World War One, I don't know if you know the story of Sergeant York, but there was this little farm kid, pretty much uneducated, just very sweet, God-fearing farm boy from like Tennessee or somewhere. His name was Alvin York, and he went to war. He didn't really want to, but like he kind of had to. And he was a deadeye and, you know, so good at shooting. He actually pretty much did what Gatsby is bragging about doing here. And he was, and the thing that tipped me off was the Montenegro decoration. I was like, that sounds like where Sergeant York was. He was decorated everywhere in like almost every country in the Allied forces. But Montenegro, that's like so random. So I actually just looked it up just to make sure. And sure enough, he earned decorations from several Allied countries during World War One, including France, Italy, and Montenegro. So there it is. Yeah, it's like, yeah, that's kind of a story that really happened in World War One, but it wasn't Gatsby's story. He took it from somebody
else. He adopted it. That's funny. Oh. Yeah, what I thought was funny about that, when he's telling his unbelievable story, a couple of things. One is that he asks Nick what his opinion is of him. Oh, well, he says this. What's your opinion of me anyhow? Well, I'm going to tell you something about my life. I don't want you to get a wrong idea from me from all these stories you hear. So he's aware that there's all these rumors about him that people are talking about. Nick says, as the narrator, he says this. He looked at me sideways and I knew why Jordan Baker had believed he was lying. He hurried the phrase educated Oxford or swallowed it or choked on it as though it had bothered him before. And with his doubt, his whole statement fell to pieces. And I wondered if there was something a little sinister about him after all. But like, the funny thing is, he says he came from the Middle West. And Nick's like, well, what part of the Middle West? And he's like, San Francisco.
San Francisco.
Okay. But he says he went to Oxford. His family all died and he had inherited a lot of money. He'd lived in Europe and became a jewel collector. And he had done all of these things in order to forget something very sad that had happened to him. And then, this is my favorite part, Nick says, as the narrator, with an effort, I managed to restrain my incredulous laughter. So he's just right? Like, I was just going to ask you, like, have you ever been in a situation like that where you're like, something is happening and you're just like, how do I not? You know, like you're trying to control your laughter because it's just, you can't believe what they're saying.
Yeah, seriously. And probably you're just like so shocked. Like, why are you even doing this? And like, how do I even respond? There's something seriously wrong with you.
Or how do you expect me to believe this? I don't know.
Right. Yeah. And also maybe a little bit insulted because especially like that war story, Nick Carraway, he served in World War I too. And it was like pretty widely known in all the newspapers who the credit went to for that holdup in the Argonne Forest. And it wasn't Jay Gatsby.
I heard a story this week, which I hope it's okay if I share this, but so I have a friend who interviews people that have had incredible lives, right? She told me this week that somebody had introduced her to this guy and said, like, this guy is amazing. You've got to meet him. You should interview him. And she starts talking to him and he starts telling her all these like stories about things that he's been involved in. And this person that does the interviews reads military books.
Mm-hmm.
And after the conversation was like, none of that was true.
Oh like, my God.
There's no way that he was involved in all of this stuff. And like, if he was, he wouldn't have been able to tell us. And like, and so she had to tell the person that wow. had like introduced her, he's not as amazing as you think.
Yeah. Oh yeah. That's kind of sad and draining. Wow.
It just reminded me of, like when you were telling me, I was like, oh yeah. Like, or we just watched this, I can't remember what it was called, the show about a cult, but it was like this man, this father of a college student who had basically abused his daughter's friends, but he had all these pictures of himself, like in all these important situations. And so they, mm-hmm. I don't know if he'd like Photoshopped himself into them, but oh. So the kids were like super impressed because he'd met with all these leaders and then he just eventually ended up abusing them and he's in jail.
That was his own bizarre way of like grooming people.
Yes.
Interesting. Yeah. And some of it is probably like pathological lying.
Yeah.
In Jay Gatsby's situation though, maybe it became that way, but I don't know. I think he's been trying so hard to build this sort of persona of himself and to dig himself out of his past that he feels like he has to say these things to be accepted in this society.
One thing that's interesting later is like you find out that he invented himself at 17.
Yeah.
And so, and he concocted this story that a 17-year-old would make up and he had to stick with it.
Yeah, seriously. And you realize as you go along, he is kind of stuck in his 17-year-old self.
Yes. Yes.
In many ways, not just his story, but kind of emotionally and socially and just, so. Oh, there was one thing I put a star by when Jordan is talking about Daisy in Chicago. I think it's really interesting. You know, these people are just, they live such voluptuous lives, you know, and everything is over the top and there's not a lot of thought put into anything. A big thing for them is drinking. And it's supposed to be during the era of prohibition, which obviously didn't work at all. But Jordan talks about how Daisy was popular in Chicago. She said she came out with an absolutely perfect reputation, perhaps because she doesn't drink. It's a great advantage not to drink among hard drinking people. You can hold your tongue. And moreover, you can time any little irregularity of your own so that everybody else is so blind that they don't see or care. Yeah, it was like Daisy was able to sort of stay above the crowd and also be very aware of what was going on all the time, which was probably what contributed to her popularity, because she sort of knew, she probably knew everybody's secrets and nobody knew hers because she didn't drink. And so everybody was opening up and spilling their guts and she didn't. And also she could kind of do what she wanted because she knew everybody was in a drunken stupor and wouldn't remember anyway.
Totally. One funny thing, I thought this stuff has to do with when Nick meets Wolfsheim. There were a couple words that I was like, what does this even mean? And I don't know how to say this one, but somnambulatory.
Oh, yeah.
Somnambulatory. Did you look it up or do you know what it means?
So that's one that I circled because I was like, okay, it has to do with moving somehow, but I don't remember what it means here.
Sleepwalking.
Oh, that's right.
Because ambulatory is moving, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, I thought that was really funny. And then I looked up, the first time I came across the word connection, I was like, what the heck is that? I looked it up and it literally says it's used in The Great Gatsby as Wolfsheim's like accent or whatever. He's saying connection.
Yeah. I just assumed that he was like mostly drunk or something. And that's, so he was just slurring all of his words and wasn't able to give the hard C.
It was funny. And so then the other thing is funny. His cuff buttons that are made from human molars.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
And Nick's like, well, are you a dentist? And he's like, no. Okay, well.
Ew.
Weird.
There are so many very bizarre people in this book. And I can't help but think that F. Scott Fitzgerald kind of had fun with that a little bit. Because they were probably based on real people too, you know? He's like, no, I've actually met all these kind of weird people. So chapter 5 is when Nick returns home after his evening with Jordan. And they gave each other a kiss at the end of the night. There's sort of a burgeoning romance there. So he gets to his house. It's like 2 o'clock in the morning. And I just wrote down, I was like, do these people ever sleep? They keep the strangest hours. Good grief. And Gatsby, his house is all lighted up and Nick sees him striding across his lawn towards him. And Gatsby is like, hey, do you want to drive out to Coney Island with me? Nick is like, no. He says, do you want to go for a swim? No. The thing is, he's obviously really nervous because he knew that Nick had met with Jordan. He knew what Jordan was going to say to him. And so I think he's sort of like trying to get a feel for Nick's reaction, what he's going to do. So Nick is just like, I'm going to call Daisy tomorrow morning and invite her to tea. We'll do it the day after tomorrow and it'll be fine. So he calls Daisy the next morning and he specifically is like, hey, come to tea and don't bring Tom. She's like, who's Tom? So weird. It's like she immediately gets it. So the day of the tea party comes, Gatsby is super, super flustered. He sends over his gardener guy to like cut Nick's grass so that it looks perfect. He sends over huge amounts of flowers so that there's flowers all over Nick's house. And then he shows up at like 3 o'clock. He's so fidgety and just very nervous. And at 3:58, he's like, nobody's coming to tea. Not happening. And Nick's like, it's 2 minutes to 4. Just wait a second, you know?
He's probably like, this was a horrible idea.
Yeah.
I'm out.
Seriously. Like, poor Nick the whole time. And right then, Daisy arrives. Nick goes out to welcome Daisy and bring her into the house. And they go in and they walk in and he's expecting to be like, oh, here's Gatsby, you know? Gatsby is not there. He's just totally disappeared. Nick's like, what is even happening right now? This whole part is so funny to me because right then there's a knock on the door and Daisy's not really even necessarily expecting anybody else. So she's just like, la, la, la. There's a knock on the door. Nick goes over and opens the door and there's Gatsby. It's been pouring rain and he is just drenched. I had to write this down, the exact quote, because I thought it was so funny. So there's Gatsby, pale as death, with his hands plunged like weights in his coat pockets, standing in a puddle of water, glaring tragically into Nick's eyes. It's just like, what do I do now? So he just like zooms into the house, makes a beeline for the living room. He like leans awkwardly against the mantle, almost breaks Nick's clock. The whole thing is so awkward and so funny. Finally, after a while, Nick, like, you know, it kind of breaks the ice a little bit the best he can, but finally he excuses himself and he goes outside. It's still pouring rain, so he kind of finds shelter under this tree and just like hangs out for like half an hour, just looking around. Finally, he goes back into the house. He says he makes as much noise as he can to sort of like, you know, announce his approach. Goes into the room, and it's like Daisy and Gatsby are two completely different people. I want to back up really quickly. As Nick excuses himself, Gatsby's like, wait, 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 wait. He goes over to him. He's like, this was a huge mistake. This was such a big mistake. Shouldn't have done this. Nick is like, Daisy's embarrassed too. It's okay. Gatsby's like, wait, she is? Yes, she is. It's almost like that sort of brings Gatsby back down to earth. And it's like, okay, I'm not the only awkward one. Then Nick goes out. He hangs out, comes back in. Everything is different. The entire vibe has changed. Gatsby is confoundingly changed and he's literally glowing. They've obviously reconnected. So then Gatsby invites Daisy and Nick over for a tour of his house. The entire time, Gatsby is just watching Daisy. He like almost falls down his stairs. He's watching her so intently. And it says it's like he's revaluing everything in his house according to the measure of response it drew from her well-loved eyes. It's so weird. He takes him to his closet and he like starts pulling out all of his shirts and ties and puts them in a big pile on his table. Daisy like buries her head in his shirts and starts sobbing. And he's like, it just makes me so sad. I've never seen so many beautiful shirts. So weird. So
can I talk about that really quick? That's one
yes,
of my things that I had.
Do.
It's hilarious because she's not actually crying about the shirts.
No, 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 no.
And it's funny. It's just a funny picture that she's like, the shirts, I've never seen such beautiful shirts. Okay, what is she actually crying about? Well, this is what I think she's crying about. She married for money. If she had just waited and been patient with Gatsby, she could have married for money. I mean, love and money.
Yes.
So I think that's what's hitting her is she's like, I could have had it all.
I think it's super symbolic because I think F. Scott Fitzgerald was really like talking to the time because the Roaring Twenties were just wild and people's behaviors, the way they were living, it really is what led to the market crash. And it was like, we need to have it all right now instead of being patient and like, and waiting and being more careful and calculating and actually having some meaning in their life instead of just let's party all the time. Let's spend all this money. Let's be stupid. Let's go in debt. Instead, if there was some patience and some forethought and sticking your nose to the grind and doing things the right way, perhaps the depression wouldn't have happened. I know there's a lot more to the depression than just people being crazy with their money at during those years, but I think that's something that he was addressing as well. And so Daisy is sort of like a symbol of that. Why were you so foolish?
Yeah.
Just wait a minute.
I think that too. Like, is it, I've always thought that, is it worth marrying for money?
Gosh, no. You know, I don't think it ever is. I don't think it ever would be.
It's almost like you're selling yourself.
Oh.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, like, for real.
I think about that. Like a lot of times you'll see, you know, these celebrities, like these older men, right? Like rich men or rich celebrities that have these really young, beautiful wife. And you're like, it's very similar to something else, in my opinion. And so, I don't know. It's just funny. I mean, it's just hard not to look at them and think, how can like, you do that to yourself?
How
I mean, maybe they
do
love them. Maybe. I think they're money. And then when you're the rich person, are you thinking, do they love me or do they love my money?
Yeah. And maybe, I mean, I tend to think that a lot of them don't care because they're getting what they want. You know, I mean, I think that a lot of very, very wealthy people like that, some of them, do they really care? Because they're kind of getting what they want anyway. So why does it matter?
It's true.
Okay, so carrying on. So they go out on the porch and Gatsby then shows Daisy like, look, I can see your house across the water. And there's this green light that showed me that that was your house. And Nick's like, well, that has now lost sort of some of its significance because now Daisy is here, you know? He also shows her this stash of newspaper clippings, which mention her. So that's a little creepy, but it's fine. So the entire thing to me is just like very surreal, very dreamlike, very awkward, because it's like this thing that Gatsby has dreamed of for so long for 5 years, and now it's here. And probably in her own way, Daisy has too. And so neither of them really know how to act. It's probably one of those things that Gatsby would look back on and just be like, oh my gosh, why did I say that? Why did I do that? So Nick finally excuses himself. And I just wanted to end with this last part of the chapter. He said, they had forgotten me, but Daisy glanced up and held out her hand. Gatsby didn't know me now at all. I looked once more at them, and they looked back at me remotely, possessed by intense life. Then I went out of the room and down the marble steps into the rain, leaving them there together.
Yeah, they forgot about him. Later, in the next chapter, they say that in a synopsis I read, it said that, like, it's considered that Daisy and him are having an affair now. So yeah, I thought that was kind of interesting. At the end, you know, when you talked about the light and how it, like, doesn't have the same meaning anymore, this quote, Daisy put her arm through his abruptly, but he seemed absorbed in what he had just said. Possibly it had occurred to him that the colossal significance of that light had now vanished forever. Compared to the great distance that had separated him from Daisy, it had seemed very near to her, almost touching her. It had seemed as close as a start to the moon. Now it was again a green light on a dock. His count of enchanted objects had diminished by one. I don't know if that's saying that, like, he has this ideal or this, like, vision of who she is. And she was this enchanted object that was across the bay and unattainable. And now that she's here, it's like he can't let go of that. It's almost like he's disappointed by her. I don't know. He had built up this vision of her and who she was in his own mind. I think,
yes,
quote in the next thing, but
yeah, there is. It says, I think this is what you're talking about. It says, I saw that the expression of bewilderment had come back into Gatsby's face, as though a faint doubt had occurred to him as to the quality of his present happiness. Is that what you're talking about?
Yes.
Almost 5 years. There must have been moments, even that afternoon, when Daisy tumbled short of his dreams. Not through her own fault, but because of the colossal vitality of his illusion. That's what we tend to do as human beings anyway, isn't it? It's like anything that's not right here before us, we have a tendency to make it either way worse or way better than it is in reality.
Yeah, and how much of her appeal was that she was unattainable. And he also really likes competition when it comes to romance. And so once he gets her, it's kind of a letdown. Like, oh, she's just human.
It's been 5 years. And like we said before, he's almost like stuck in his 17-year-old brain. And yet he's 32. I don't know. It's just, there's a big disconnect there.
On to chapter 6. So newspaper reporters have started coming to Gatsby's house to interview him and to get the real story, because we have all these, so many rumors that I've written
all
down.
All these legends. Yes.
And his real story comes out right here. He was born James Gatz. And at the age of 17, he reinvented himself. We talked about that in the last chapter. I liked this quote. His parents were shiftless and unsuccessful farm people. His imagination had never really accepted them as his parents at all. So he was not born to wealthy parents. He actually didn't even want to claim them as his own. A couple other things. He had lasted 2 weeks at this little small Lutheran college called St. Olaf's. He'd spent a year on Lake Superior claiming and fishing. And that's when he met Dan Cody, who owned a yacht, and he was a multimillionaire. Now, he drank too much, and he knew it. He knew he drank too much. And so he hired Gatsby to be like his assistant to keep him in check. And that's probably why Gatsby doesn't drink.
I think it even says here that that kind of turned him off to it forever.
Yeah, he realized, like, yeah, if I don't drink, I'm in control of myself. Anyways, so this lasted for 5 years where Gatsby was his assistant or whatever, and then Cody dies. Now, at this point, Gatsby was supposed to inherit $25,000 from Dan Cody, but it was like a legal technicality. He didn't ever get it. Now, it sounded to me like, I'm going to ask you this. It sounded like maybe a woman came in and actually killed him.
I think so. Yeah.
And she ended up with the money somehow. So
she ended up with all of it, with millions. Yeah, because she came on his boat and 1 week later he died.
Yeah.
Mysteriously.
Exactly. Yeah.
It suggested before that this Ella Kay was kind of after him for his money. And many women were, but she's the one who kind of came out on top. So
she won. So after this, Gatsby just decides he's going to dedicate himself to being like rich and successful, and he's not going to stop until he is. And I think we'll find out later that he'll do anything to be rich and successful. So after this, Nick has like learned the real story about Gatsby. He doesn't see him for weeks. Like he's just disappeared. Not a phone call, not nothing. He hasn't seen him. But one afternoon, Tom shows up at Gatsby's house with his friends, the Sloanes. In this conversation with Tom and Gatsby, Gatsby mentions that he knows Tom's wife. In the moment, Tom doesn't say anything. He just kind of goes on. Gatsby invites them to stay for dinner. And they say they can't, but they invite him and Nick to go to dinner with them. And Nick says, no, I can't. Well, Gatsby totally doesn't understand that they don't want him to come to dinner. He's too excited. He's like, yeah, I'll go. You know, Mr. Sloan keeps kind of whispering things to people and like, we don't want him to go. Like, why did you invite him? And the wife seems to not care. She's just like, oh yeah, he can come. It's not a big deal. But Tom and Sloan are like, we don't want him to come. So I think this is so mean. While he's inside getting his coat, they leave him and they just say, tell him I couldn't wait any longer.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
So sad.
Just bullies.
Gatsby's gone. But as they're waiting, Tom mentions, I wonder how he knows my wife. So it's starting to bother him. So the next weekend, Daisy and Tom go to Gatsby's house for a party. Now, Tom goes because he's worried about Daisy going off on her own because of what Gatsby had said about knowing her. Neither of them have a very good time at this party, even though Daisy and Gatsby dance. And then they even sneak off over onto Nick's porch to talk for a little bit during the party. Other than that time, Daisy seems to not be having a good time at all. And I think I'll talk about this later, but I think it has something to do with Tom's presence. Negative energy at the whole party. Mm-hmm. It seems to affect everybody there. I think even Nick says it was the same, like the same decorations, the same people, but Tom's presence was kind of a damper on everything. Gatsby is worried that Daisy didn't have a good time. And he's kind of talking, I think he's talking to Nick about it, right? And he says this, I think he expects Daisy to just like forget everything and be with him. So he says he wanted nothing less of Daisy than that she should go to Tom and say, I never loved you. So he wants the last 5 years to just go away and for things to be just like they were when they were together the first time, which is funny because if you really could do that, he wouldn't have anything he has.
That's true.
And then Nick says that Gatsby's sentimentality is appalling and remembers at the very end of the chapter, he's kind of remembering a story that Gatsby had told him about him and Daisy's first kiss. Basically, from then on, she had become like the focus, the center, everything in Gatsby's life. It's probably why he did everything. Maybe it doesn't even have anything to do with her. Maybe it's just the fact that he lost her or she chose something else. And so then he's like, I'm going to do everything I can to get her back. That could be why he wanted to earn all the money and did illegal things to earn this money.
I keep saying it, but it's like he really is very much stuck in his adolescent brain. A lot of people do stupid things for love or money or whatever. And so maybe that's where this is more symbolic than anything and sort of a warning, like, don't let things just take over your heart so much that all of your ambition is just put into one place and you throw everything else aside, including your morals and all that's right and good. I mean, I don't know, but.
Well, and I've seen that a lot with, you know, being the mother of teenagers and young adult children.
Yeah.
This is how they act.
Well, it is. Yeah. But he's remained this way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's what I'm saying is now he's 32 and he's acting like what I see in my teenagers.
Yeah, it's a super accurate representation of teenagers, like especially 17 and 18 year olds. And you're like, what are you doing? And their brains are like not working. And any responsible adult in their life can see that, but they can't see it. Do we ever actually know what Gatsby did to get his money? Like,
it comes out later, I believe.
Okay.
So do you remember, I think it's this chapter where, yes, it is, where Tom accuses him of bootlegging.
Right. That's actually exactly what I was just going to share.
Yeah, go ahead.
Because Tom was like, who is this Gatsby anyhow? Some big bootlegger. And Nick says, where'd you hear that? I didn't hear it. I imagined it. A lot of these newly rich people are just big bootleggers, you know? I only even marked this because I was like, this is the first time that Nick, to my memory, actually like opposes something that somebody says that is untrue. And he says, not Gatsby. People have said all kinds of crap about Daisy and he won't say anything. They'll say crap about Gatsby, other stuff, and he won't say anything. This is the only time. So maybe it is actually true. I mean, I don't know.
It is. That's what it is.
He actually is a bootlegger. Mm-hmm. So
that's what I read. I haven't read that in the book yet, but what I read is that he actually is right on.
So there you go. Yeah. So again, like, what is with this Nick guy? Like, the only time that he will stand up for something is when it's something that is actually true and he'll say it's not true.
Makes you think, does he know? Or is he just being like, you know, does he know what that is true? Or is he just like, oh, it couldn't be. He just doesn't believe it. I don't know.
I don't know either.
Yeah, that's interesting. And then also Daisy jumps in and she's like, no, he made it. He made his money through pharmacy. Is it pharmacies?
Yeah, setting up a bunch of drugstores. Yeah.
Which she doesn't even know that either. So
no, she kind of just made that up. Yeah, like in every chapter, it seems like there's a different assumption about how he made his money. Because nobody really knows. Except Tom may have hit it right on the head.
Yeah, I wonder if he knows or if he just made it up too. I don't know.
He's kind of a lout, but he is. Those kinds of people tend to know how other rich people make their money. And they're not welcoming to new money.
Yeah, because he's saying the new money, that's how they all make their new money.
Right. And so
something illegal.
Right. He's made this observation. It's like, well, it couldn't be legitimate. And that would also kind of explain to like Gatsby sees the power of drink and he sees how much people love it and he stays away from it himself, but he knows he can make a killing selling it to other people. So
it reminds me of like, is it the Apple, the guy that is the CEO of
Steve
Apple?
Steve Jobs.
Yeah. Who doesn't let his kids have phones.
Yeah.
Like that's scary.
Yeah, it is.
We talked about how he has this idea of her, but it's not really who she is. He just made it up. And then the other thing I had was that Tom, but basically following Daisy around and going to the party and how he brings all this negative energy to it. And then how it's a total double standard because he has a mistress. He goes into New York City with his mistress all the time. But then like, as soon as he suspects that she maybe, I don't even know what, if he thinks she's having an affair or whatever, but he's right behind her and he's like, I don't want you to be with anybody, but just total double standard.
It is. And it's also very much like an in your face of how that relationship has been through all of human history.
Yeah.
You can find examples everywhere, but I was specifically thinking about kind of a more high profile case where there's Henry VIII and he had so many mistresses, always had a mistress. And yet he beheaded his wives. A couple of his wives were beheaded, specifically Catherine, the fifth wife. I don't know, was she the, I can't remember. Anyway, Catherine Howard was beheaded because she had an affair. So he could do it all the time, but his wife couldn't. Now, it's wrong across the board, but what a double standard. That's amazing, isn't it?
I just heard a poem. Oh, here. This is so great. Random that you brought this up. And I just heard this poem. Divorced, beheaded, died. Divorced, beheaded, survived.
Yeah.
That's how you remember how his wives.
Yeah.
I have no clue. But in the last day, that I have heard that.
That's so funny. Where did you hear that from?
I have no clue. Probably a podcast about books. I'm trying to think about the one I listened to. Which one I listened to yesterday. I don't know. I'll have to go back. I don't know. But it's just when you said that, I was like, oh my gosh, I just heard a poem about how he
remembers. Yeah. Yeah.
Had you heard that before?
I have heard it before just because I went through a very long period of time of like reading everything that I could about Henry VIII and all of his wives somewhere in my studying came up many times. And then in our homeschool history, and teaching my kids about that period of time, we went over that too, but
that's funny.
But it's good. It's super helpful. And so, yes, it was the fifth wife, Catherine.
I was going to say, I can
she
help
was,
you.
She was the second beheaded.
My other question, though, is, I mean, I don't know. I've never read this book before, so I'm assuming it doesn't work out between Gatsby and Daisy. But is Tom too much of a hurdle? And would Daisy ever leave him for Gatsby? I don't think so.
I don't think so, because I don't think, first of all, affairs never work out. Second of all, would she be justified in leaving Tom? Absolutely. I just don't think she ever would, because I don't think she has the guts. I don't think that she really has that much depth of feeling or that much depth of thinking.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. And that's not to try to like slam her or something. It's just, she's unfortunately a very shallow person. She's very clever. She's very witty and intelligent, but not a deep thinker. Pretty darn shallow.
Yeah.
In like every way.
Awesome. I am dying to know what you've been reading.
Okay. I'm going to share this one. I really have enjoyed it. I'm just about done with it. It's called Codename Edelweiss by Stephanie Lansom. It's actually a brand new book. It's a part of World War II history, which everybody probably knows that like I'm obsessed with World War II history, but it's something that like everybody is right now, it seems like, because so much more is coming out because we're a couple generations removed. And so now everybody's writing about it. But this is a part that's not talked about as much, and it kind of should be. It's important. So it's just about the anti-Semitism, sort of the rise of the Nazi Party in America, specifically Hollywood, because Hollywood, MGM, was run by Jews. And so there was sort of this plan by Hitler to take over Hollywood and to start getting rid of Jews in America and to start there, you know, use Hollywood to spread propaganda, right? So Codename Edelweiss is all about specifically this guy named Leon Lewis, who was a real man. He was a Jew, but he sort of ran this spy ring in America to try to bring attention to the rise of the Nazi Party and its evils, and how they kind of had the police in their pocket. There are a lot of government leaders who were like, we have a lot of other things to worry about, not this. This is not a problem in America. But it totally was. And so he had spies working for him to help bring down the Friends of Germany, the Nazi Party in America. So it's really good. Yeah, I think it's very well done. I've enjoyed it a lot.
Are you listening to it?
Yeah.
I told my mother-in-law yesterday, she had this book and she's like, do you want to borrow it? I was like, no, I have to listen to books.
I know. I check out books at the library all the time with like high hopes, because I'm like, this looks so good and I can't find it on Hoopla or Library to Go or anything. And I don't have time.
No, there's no like sitting. So
no, it's so sad.
Okay. So the book I want to share is, it's a newer book. I believe it came out in March, but it's called A Quiet Life by Ethan Joella. I really liked it. It was like his character. I mean, it's called A Quiet Life, so it's like kind of character driven. So, you know, I don't know, something I don't normally gravitate to, because I like a lot of stuff to happen in the books that I read. But so it's about three people whose lives intersect and they're all kind of dealing with grief and loss. You know, not much happens, but we have Chuck, who's the first, and he's like an older man whose wife named Kat just died. And every year they go to the Hilton Head on a trip. And he's kind of trying to figure out, like, how do I go without her? Like, he's packing and he's like, I don't know if I can do this. He's concerned about her stuff. He has two kids and he's afraid they're going to come in and like clean out her stuff, and he's not ready to get rid of it. Like, he has a special towel that she uses and like her books. And anyways, it's just, he's grieving and doesn't know how he can go on. But then the second person is Ella. Now, she's a newspaper delivery person and she works in a flower shop. And her problem is that her husband, her ex-husband, kidnapped their four-year-old like 4 months earlier. And has been missing. Oh, so her little girl has been missing for 4 months. He just like goes and picks her up from school. At first, the police are like, well, there's nothing we can do. Like, he is her parent. He took her, right? And I don't know if they're divorced yet. So I don't know if there's like a actual like court order.
Custody thing or anything. Yeah.
But he just took her. And I really like that storyline, because the little girl calls her. Because she knows her phone number. She might be a little bit older than four. I think she is older than four, actually. I think she's like six or seven. So she calls her and the lady's like, where's your dad? She's like, he's outside looking for something in the car. She's like, okay, well, let's keep this a secret that we talked. Look outside and tell me everything you can see. Like, and so she figures out where she's at.
Oh,
and then that's like awesome. Sends the police to like find her. But anyways, it was very good. But, and then the third person is Kristen, whose father was suddenly killed. Like, he was shot outside of a convenience store, and she was in veterinary school. And just because of the grief, she stopped. And now she's like working in an animal shelter. And then she's got these two guys that are kind of interested in her. And that kind of is what's bringing her back to life emotionally.
So do the three stories kind of come together?
Yeah. And so in the end, they're all friends and intertwined. But the one way is Chuck wants to adopt a pig. And so he goes to the animal shelter to adopt a pig. And then, so that's how he meets her. And then Ella is the newspaper delivery girl for Chuck too. And so they kind of help each other. Like, they go on a little trip. A couple of them go on a little trip at the end while Ella is going to get her 4-year-old daughter or her daughter from Florida. She ends up in Florida. But it's good. I mean, it's good. Well,
that's cool. I like that. And I really enjoy it when authors write these books with these three, like, seemingly extremely separate stories, but they all tie together. I really love that. It makes me think of, like, Refugee by Ellen Gratz. And then also Echo. It's not Pam Munoz Ryan, is it?
I think it is. Yes, you're right.
So, yeah, but both of those are just extraordinary books, I think. And
how weave it together at the end. And it's like, yeah. Oh, that's how they're connected.
Because you're reading it and you're like, there's probably a way that they tie together or else these would be very random. But as you're reading, you're also going, how are they going to tie together? But they do. And it's always like very kind of touching and emotional. So
yes, love it. I love both That's of those cool. books. He's really fun to listen to. If you can find Ethan Joella, is like, if you can find author interviews, he teaches at a college. And anyways, he's really interesting. And he wrote another book called, here we go, A Little Hope was his first novel. And then this was his second one. Next week, we're going to finish The Great Gatsby. Then we should probably let people know that we're going to do another book after that, a kid's book. And then we're going to take the month of June off. So there will be no new episodes in the month of June. And then we'll pick back up in July. So
yeah, come back strong.
We're so happy you joined us for this episode. We hope you will join us next week as we discuss The Great Gatsby chapters 7-9. If you have suggestions for books we should read and discuss, please email us at thebestbookspodcast@gmail.com. We would love it if you would leave a review wherever you listen to podcasts and share our podcast with your friends. We want to inspire and encourage as many people as we can to read out of the best books.
As Thoreau says, read the best books first, or you may not have a chance to read them at all. See you next week.